You're listening to Blueprint for Living with me, Michael Williams, and not for the first time, Sense of Place today takes us to just near Venice. This time we're going to the Isle of Torcello, and we're going there with one of the world's foremost communicators on the lovely sticky point where food meets travel meets culture. We're talking to Rick Stein. Let's just hear a little bit more of that music first. Rick Stein has a much anticipated new book out. It's called From Venice to Istanbul. It's going to accompany a new BBC series, and the man who is known for his extraordinary gastronomy and his transporting storytelling joins us on Blueprint for Living now. Rick Stein, thanks so much for coming on the show.
A pleasure, Michael. Absolute pleasure.
Now, this is a very nice starting point. Your book takes us from Venice to Istanbul, and before... Yes. We get to the sense of place in particular. Why that part of the world? What is it about that part of the world that inspires you?
Well, about 5-6 years ago, I made a series called A Mediterranean Escapes. And most of that series was about the Western Mediterranean, for want of a better way of describing it. Mostly Spain and Italy and a bit of Morocco. And I always felt, although in that program we did go to Turkey, I just thought that the food of the Eastern Mediterranean was quite distinct from that of the Western Mediterranean. I wanted to make a program about it, and I started thinking, well, where can we go, and started looking at a map and realized, well, actually there's a lot of places we couldn't go because there's sort of nasty little wars on, notably in Syria.
It's very inconvenient.
Very inconvenient. And in fact, when I was thinking about the Eastern Mediterranean, Syria was really big in my mind, because when we'd been filming in Turkey before, everybody had been telling me how wonderful the food in Syria was. So it's a bit sad. So then I thought, well, we can still do the Eastern Mediterranean. We can go to Greece for a start, which I'd filmed once before in the island of Corfu, and we can go back to Turkey. And then I thought, well, let's sort of make a theme of Byzantium. Let's think of the Byzantine world, and where almost let's travel from a point to another point and bring in sort of ideas and food thoughts about Byzantium. So then I thought about Venice, and there is a lot of influences from the East in Venetian cooking. And then I thought, well, what about a journey? The going the long way round from Venice to Istanbul, and taking in maybe Greece, part of the Dalmatian coast, and ending up in Turkey. So that's how it sort of came about.
I wish my job gave me the chance to make choices. Like, oh, why don't I make the long trip from Venice to Turkey? That'd be a fun way to go. I don't remember the last day of work I had that started like that. Tell me, were you a chef first or a traveller first?
A chef first, really. I used travelling as a way of finding dishes to take back to my restaurant in Padstow in Cornwall. So right from the 80s, I'd be sort of like almost like a magpie going out and stealing dishes from places like India or Southeast Asia or indeed Australia, and taking them back to Padstow. Because I sort of thought at the time, you know, British seafood cooking, my restaurant's called The Seafood Restaurant, there is a little bit there, but not much. So if I wanted to make the menu exciting and interesting, I'd have to go all over the place trying to find dishes to take back there. And that sort of nomadic life ended up in TV series and a sort of a craze for doing it, really. I have to keep travelling, have to keep finding lovely new dishes, and I certainly did on this series.
So it's not Venice itself that you wanted to kind of put under the spotlight today. It's the Isle of Torcello. Tell us about that.
Well, Michael, it means a lot to me, the Isle of Torcello, because I think if you go to Venice, you have to go to some of those lagoon islands, because it's sort of continuing the romance. I mean, Venice itself is a wonderful city, as you know, and, you know, filled with, I always think a slightly sort of melancholy romance, because I've been there so often in the winter months, because it's so much better going there off-season.
Tourist-free.
The tourists So it's always either a bit chilly or a bit foggy. And the first time I went to Torcello, it was just like that. And I've actually written in the book about the island of Torcello. And I've sort of, because when I fell in love with my wife, Sarah, soon after that, we went to Torcello. And I say in the intro to the recipe, I've got a recipe from the restaurant on Torcello called Locanda Cipriani. And I've said, when people ask me, what's your favourite restaurant in the world? I reply, it depends how I'm feeling. But if you're in love, shall we say desperately in love, it has to be Locanda Cipriani on the Venetian island of Torcello. On a crisp winter's lunchtime, you arrive reclining in a vaporetto with a view just skimming the water. You see the low islands of Murano, Burano and Torcello. And then you get into Torcello. And it's just that sort of... Just always remember, you know, you see these low islands and you're arriving and the sort of atmosphere is just tremendous. And luckily, if you're lucky, you arrive on a sort of crisp morning like I'm describing. And I was with my wife at the time. And it was what made it so special is she had no idea where she was going or just how beautiful it was. And when you see the sort of whole sort of that whole thing unfolding in front of somebody who loves eyes, and you just look at the sort of wonder. It is that order of specialness, I think, Torcello. And of course, there's this wonderful Byzantine church on Torcello with the most fantastic mosaics of the Last Judgment. So you can go and fill your soul, fill your spiritual side, and then wander just down the path into the most fabulous restaurant. And in the winter, there's always a log fire blazing. And always some fabulous food.
Rick, you're just making me sick. It's just sickening. I don't want to... This isn't even vicarious now. It's just too much. I like that you've gone to the place that you go to if Venice isn't romantic enough for you. You've got to leave boring old mundane Venice and head out to one of the islands. Tell us about the restaurant. What is it about this restaurant, apart from a big fire on a crisp, wintry day?
Well, it's owned by the same family that have Harry's Bar in Venice and used to own the Cipriani Hotel on the Giudecco. And also, they've now got Harry's Bars all over the place. There's one in America. There's one in London. But Locanda is their sort of country restaurant, if you like. And they just do very simple Italian dishes. I mean, the one I particularly loved when we went there filming was because it was sort of early summer, so they still had a Prima Verde risotto on with lots of vegetables in it. And indeed, just across from the restaurant was a little market garden growing artichokes, and that was the main ingredient in the risotto. And then they do fantastic, of course, seafood dishes. And I have another dish from the book called John Dory a la Carlina. The name Carlina refers to one of the family members. It's just very simple John Dory fried in olive oil and then finished with tomato, gherkins, capers, bit of Worcester sauce, and a little bit of tomato sauce. And it's sort of the sort of thing you would cook at home because it's so easy. But having that with a glass of, actually at the time, a Pinot Grigio, I remember having, a really special Pinot Grigio, it's just sensational.
And I love it. It does sound pretty spectacular. So is the fishing still good in the lagoon? I mean, what kind of seafood city is Venice now?
Well, I mean, surprisingly, Michael, it is still good. I mean, that market in the Rialto market, fish market in the centre of Venice, is still teeming with the most beautiful-looking fish. I mean, the Italians, like the French, have a way of showing their seafood off in such a sort of stunning arrangement. I remember occasionally doing actually two filming sequences, one in Sicily and one near Naples, where the display of fish was just so special that, in fact, you feel like you're in an opera. And we'd actually filmed in this fish market called Pozzuoli, at the little town of Pozzuoli near Naples. to a sort of made up sort of opera, like in overture, because it was, you know, the Italians have this wonderful way of not only displaying their fish and seafood so wonderful, so well, but also you have the people selling it filled with sort of like, you know, persuasion and sort of romantic gestures to make you come and buy their fish. So we put the whole thing to a sort of slightly made up opera score. It worked really well.
So do you, when you're traveling to a place like that and you're not shooting a show, do you cook when you're on the road, or do you eat other people's stuff and take recipes back? Do you get a chance to be shopping in the fish markets?
Well, both, because what we do, I mean, in this Venice to Istanbul, we just found, and we're always on the lookout to find a perfect villa somewhere, and we found a villa on the island of Simi just near Rhodes in Greece, and it had everything we wanted. Basically what you want is a nice old-fashioned kitchen with a view over the sea with some islands beyond, and a good market to buy produce in. So yes, I go and check out what people are cooking all over the area, and that's the main part of the film. But then I also, in every program, and this Venice to Istanbul, when it gets here to Australia, will be a 7-part series, and I, in every one of those series, one of those episodes, I come back to Simi and cook a dish from whatever part of the journey I'm on.
If you ever need a relatively untalented bearded sous chef, do let me know, because I'm
love to.
I'll make the time available, and I'll just be there. That'd be okay. So given that the Isle of Torcello is so personally important to you, how do you find going back to it for work? How do you find going back to it to put together From Venice to Istanbul?
That's a really good question, because people always say to me, oh, you're so lucky going to all these places. But actually, we are working. I know it's hard to believe it.
And I feel sometimes, very sorry for you.
Oh, yes, fair enough. Sometimes you sort of, you can see how special a place is, but you are working. And it is important to go back if you really love somewhere. So actually, from the India series, which we did last, I longed to go back to Calcutta and Lucknow, because I was so busy in both those two cities. I didn't really have a chance to enjoy it as a tourist. And with Torcello, the reverse was true. I'd been there with my wife, and so I was really excited to point out to the director and the crew about what was so special about it. And it was really gratifying, but they got it, you know. But the film just shows the sort of the gloriousness of these, not only of the mosaics in the church, but also of the food as well.
Well, I have no doubt that you're an exceedingly busy man, but I do wish you the opportunity to go back there on a crisp winter's day again and sit by the fire with a Pinot Grigio, not for work, but just for pleasure.
Thank you.
It's been terrific to talk to you today. Thanks so much for joining us on Blueprint for Living.
Cheers, Michael. Lots of fun.
Rick Stein's restaurants have won him a host of awards, accolades and fans, as have his TV series and many best-selling books. The most recent one is From Venice to Istanbul, and it's out now from Penguin Books. You're listening to Blueprint for Living with me, Michael Williams, here on RN. So from the city of water to the things that wash up in our seas, Anne Jones is a woman on a mission in today's Off Track in about 15 minutes. Anne, tell us what you're fishing out of the oceans this week.
Unfortunately, we're fishing for plastic this week on Off Track, and there are really surprising bits of plastic that are out there in the oceans. There's all the water bottles and things that you might expect, but there's actually billions of tiny little plastic threads, the sort that come off the synthetic clothes that we all wear, like those fleecy jackets. Apparently every wash of one of those fleecy jackets is about 1,900 tiny little threads come off it and go into the ocean and then get embedded into the stomachs of fish and all sorts of things. And we're going to be talking about the whole cycle of plastic on today's Off Track.
That is grim, dire prospects for the ecosystem. Look forward to hearing more from you then. Thanks heaps, Anne. That's Off Track coming up just after 10:30. But for now, you're listening to Blueprint for Living.